Some things just go perfectly together, like peanut butter and jam. And sometimes people come together to form a wonderful team. But what happens when the members of the perfect team can't see eye to eye anymore? Welcome to Storyline. I'm Chantel Klingbeil. Thank you for joining me. We're coming to you live. Now, this means if you want to ask a question or contribute to the program, you're very welcome to do so throughout our show. It's simple, and you can do it in a variety of ways. You can call toll-free 888-9-STORYLINE or use 707-200-1070 to call or text. And if you want more instant interaction, find Storyline on Facebook. Storyline is all about stories. These aren't make-believe stories or children's stories, but real, true-to-life stories of Bible characters that faced issues, challenges, faith questions. People like us who faced conflict. In Storyline, we focus on these Bible characters as we step into their world. To study life from their perspective, we can see our own challenges and issues mirrored. Studying these Bible characters gives us new perspectives for our lives. And the best part of it all? The best part is that in these storylines, we find a God who loves us intensely and immensely. Perhaps you were part of a dream team. Perhaps you'd found your soulmate. Or perhaps it was that warm church family that you'd always wished for. And then the conflicts began. And the relationship started to sour. Now, this isn't a new phenomena. If you have your Bible nearby, you can find an example of this happening in the early Christian church in Acts 15, 36 to 41. Let's rewind about 2,000 years. Paul and Barnabas were the dream team. They were specially selected by God. And after a very special send-off by the local church, Paul and Barnabas set off on the very first missionary trip. Along the way, Paul and Barnabas picked up a young assistant called John Mark. Now, John Mark was actually related to Barnabas. He must have heard exciting conversion stories from his cousin. I guess that was a factor that attracted him. Perhaps he wanted to see the world. Perhaps he wanted to be a part of something big. Well, whatever it was, he was sure he wanted to work for God and be on the cutting edge in this exciting new ministry. At first, John Mark must have been really excited to witness firsthand great miracles. But then he began to see other less romantic sides to missionary work. Travel was not first class, and accommodation was sometimes a lot less than first class. And the people they were trying to reach were sometimes not receptive. At other times, they were downright hostile. Mark began to miss a lot more than just his mother's cooking. Paul and Barnabas had learnt to trust in God's power for all the difficulties and troubles that they met in their travels. All they were really interested in was spreading the good news about Jesus. Mark began having second thoughts about this whole missionary thing. The actual reality of being stoned, shipwrecked, whipped, thrown into jail, it became a little much for Mark. This was a lot more than he had imagined. He got to the point where he absolutely refused to go any further. Leaving his work and his companions in the lurch, Mark hightailed back to Jerusalem. Paul and Barnabas, they bravely soldiered on through stonings and shipwreckings and all sorts of things and finished their first missionary journey. After they'd been back for just a short time, Paul suggested to Barnabas that they go and revisit all the places that they had been on in their first missionary trip, just to see how the people were getting along. Barnabas wanted to take John Mark along. Paul absolutely refused. He was not about to take a quitter along who just packs up and runs home each time the going gets tough. Barnabas, on the other hand, was inclined to excuse Mark because of his lack of experience. He saw in John Mark the makings and the quality of a great leader. All he needed was just a little bit more training. Both Paul and Barnabas were convinced that they had the right point of view, and both were not prepared to do it any other way. The Bible doesn't tell us exactly what transpired. It just says that the contention between them was so sharp that they decided to part company and go their separate ways. Barnabas took Mark and they headed for Cyprus. Paul teamed up with Silas. And in retrospect, it didn't seem to be a bad thing, because Paul and Silas also made a very good team. And they really promoted the gospel in unentered areas. Along the way, they met a young man called Timothy. And Timothy became the son that Paul had never had. They became very close. Timothy was also benefited from this relationship, and he in turn became a wonderful leader in the early church. We can actually read about the special relationship that the two of them had in 1st and 2nd Timothy, which are letters that Paul wrote to the young Timothy. Well, perhaps you're wondering what happened to Barnabas and Mark. They didn't fade from the picture completely. Barnabas, he was onto something. With a little bit of training and a little bit of help, Mark became a good, strong, firm, fearless leader. And he was prepared to work for God in lots of unentered areas. He also seemed to have quite a talent for writing. And he wrote the book of Mark, one of the Gospels. The Bible doesn't tell us whether or not Paul and Barnabas ever reconciled, but we do know that Paul and Mark, that John Mark, actually did get together again. In a letter not long before Paul's own death, we hear Paul writing to his adoptive son Timothy. He writes and says how important Mark is to the gospel ministry and what a great person he's turned out to be. Seems that Paul finally discovered Mark's worth. Some of us are by nature a bit more passive and prefer avoiding conflict. Others seem to enjoy winning an argument. But all of us want relationships that work, that are creative, energizing, positive, supportive. And yet these types of relationships seem so hard to initiate and even harder to maintain. We have with us in the studio Donna Mashburn. Welcome to Storyline, Donna.
Thank you for asking me.
Right after the break, Donna will be walking us through the minefield of interpersonal conflict. Stay with us. Donna Mashburn is a certified Christian conciliator with Peacemaker Ministries. She's also a wife, mother, and an office manager for a medical practice, so she has a lot of opportunity to practice peacemaking. Welcome again to Storyline.
Thank you.
We're really happy to have you.
Thank you.
Now, that peacemaker, certified Christian peacemaker, what was it again?
Conciliator.
What exactly do you do?
I am with Peacemaker Ministries organization is how I'm certified through. And that is an international organization that gives people the equipment and the assistance with Christians and their churches to use biblical peacemaking in conflicts.
So you've really taken to heart, blessed are the peacemakers.
Yes.
And turned this into a ministry.
I have.
Well, this is wonderful. Now, I've heard that amongst couples, and I'm not speaking for other conflict, but that is a good potential for conflict, a couple, I think. And amongst couples, one of the biggest sources of conflict is money. Is this correct?
I'm sure statistics would say that. What I'm finding when I'm talking with couples is that they come to me with other problems when they first approach me. In the end result, it could come from a money issue or whatever. But what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing are unmet desires in their heart that have not been met by their spouses.
Now, would you extend this to other conflict situations?
Oh, work, sure. Unmet desires between children and their parents, unmet desires between co-workers together, unmet desires between a worker and their boss. It's completely that. You know, the Bible talks in James 4 about where do our conflicts come from? And they specifically come from the desires within our heart.
So there we have a very ancient source that points straight to desires as being a root for conflict and conflict situations.
Correct.
I see we have a couple of props here. I like this one over here. Would you like one too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this one looks very appropriate for conflict situations. A boxing glove. I wouldn't really know quite how this works, but it looks good.
It could be fun sometimes when we're in conflict using this, okay?
It's a little bit more cushioning and it has rules at least.
So true.
Okay, so I get the gloves, but what about this megaphone or loudspeaker?
I think what we're trying to represent here is that in a conflict, there is going to be a vocal response to your unmet desires. So you're going to either speak it or shout it or go to someone passionately about your unmet desire. What is happening on the other side? For instance, if you were to use that and you're telling me what you want me to do that I have not done for you, I'm sitting on this side and what I should be doing and what I am learning through working with Peacemaker Ministries is that we should be listening.
But I think you'd be blasted.
Oh my word,
if I were shouting through this thing.
I would be.
Okay, and yet you would be supposed to be listening. Mm-hmm. That sounds like it goes against my nature. Oh, when someone's shouting emphatically at me, I'm thinking about defending myself.
Oh, you are. You are defending your desire that I've stumped on or that I have not allowed you to meet.
So we're talking past each other. We're shouting past
each
other. And we're not listening to each other.
We're not listening.
And this, coupled with our desires, is what helps things escalate, I guess.
It's so true.
I'm imagining that if I start shouting on one of these, you'd probably want to get yourself one, too.
I'd want mine. I mean, they needed to put another one on this side. That's unfair that you've got it and I don't, okay? And the two
boxing gloves.
Want both of them. I don't want just one.
Okay, so we try and build up the ammunition here and start shouting each other out.
Right. And that's essentially what happens in a conflict. You shout each other out.
Okay, it was a new concept for me, this of desires as being the root. I understand the shouting out, but what about principles? I don't know if this works with everyone, but when I'm in a disagreement, I like to think that it's based on principle that I'm here because, or I'm taking this position because I feel punctuality is an important principle and you are always late. Mm-hmm. And so I think you should learn punctuality. I'm arguing over a principle.
You are. The Bible doesn't differentiate between our desires, whether they're good or bad, when they say unmet desires, as far as I'm concerned. And so you can take a good desire. And interesting enough, I've learned that there is a progression with an unmet desire that causes the conflict, and that is the progression of an idol. I demand, and you would demand to me, you're late because I have these principles. Mm-hmm. They're good principles.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with them.
There is nothing wrong with them. It's how you react to the principle to me as your fellow believer that's going to cause the conflict. We have difference of opinions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you said it begins with?
With a demand.
A demand.
And then it goes to your expectations and you start judging me and then you start punishing me.
And there we have a very unchristian behavior. And I don't know if you're going to respond to punishment. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to try and retaliate.
Oh, sure. That's the natural sinful nature within myself. I'm going to want this instead of that.
So it's not necessarily bad to have different opinions.
So true.
And for a conflict situation to arise is probably natural.
It is. Anytime there's a difference of an opinion, you're going to have a conflict. It's what we do with those difference of opinions that matters.
Well, that is probably where we need someone like you to help us step back and listen.
Okay.
And take notes.
Yes.
Well, Donna, this has been very interesting.
Thank you.
I don't think we're going to need the boxing gloves after all.
We won't.
We'll just be listening.
We will. Thank you.
It was a real pleasure having Donna with us and giving us some insights into this painful world of conflict. After the break, we're back with some special guests as we dissect our biblical conflict. So stay with us. We'll be right back. We don't normally think of TV watching as being relationship building. Watching TV can be very one-sided. But not on Storyline. We want you to be a part of our community. You can call us, text us, find Storyline on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, download the app, or subscribe to the HD podcast. We always enjoy hearing how Storyline has impacted your life. And again, a big thank you to all of you who keep in contact with Storyline. Today, I once again have wonderful guests joining me on Storyline. Robert Mutcham joins us. He's currently studying theology at Washington Adventist University. Welcome to Storyline, Robert.
Hey, thank you.
Great to have you.
It's great to be here.
It beats studying tonight?
Oh, definitely.
We also have Pastor Anthony Kent and Deborah Kent. Anthony works in continuing education for the Ministerial Association here at the General Conference, and his wife Deborah is a nurse. They're also the parents of two lovely young ladies who I'm sure are watching. And it's again a real pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
And we have a familiar face, Natalie Monco. And she's no stranger to our programs. I love having you join us. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We don't need the boxing gloves tonight because I think this is a great team. Mm. Maybe the dream team.
I think so.
Who knows?
Yeah. There we go. Well, we've got a giant, at least a New Testament giant in our story, although I believe he was a small guy. Mm. Paul, what do we know about him as a person?
He was obviously a very powerful preacher. He could convince anyone. He was just the most amazing evangelist, wasn't he?
It seems
would
to be.
Listen to him and follow him, and he made a huge impact.
Impact is the right word. Wherever Paul went, there was plenty of action.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Robert.
I was going to say, we know him as Saul at first, stirring up the churches in a negative way, but soon finding his way to Christ, and now a powerful evangelist.
Mm. Complete turnaround.
Exactly.
And he's the author of a lot of our New Testament too. Mm-hmm. What is it, about half? Or is it a bit less than that?
Maybe a little less.
A little less. Yeah. But by any means, a
but
lot.
But if you count the maps at the back, because he often features in those maps, like with all of his trips and so forth.
Quite a traveler,
wasn't he? He could have probably written Google Maps or something of the ancient world. Huh?
I mean, he has such a great story. Like you said, action-packed from the very beginning when we meet him as Saul, mm-hmm. and then just continue on the journey. And he has so much to offer.
Mm-hmm. Well, now we have the other half of our dream team, Barnabas. What type of personality did he have?
In many respects, he was similar to Saul, who became Paul.
Similar? I always thought of him as being the more passive, quiet one on the team.
I did too, but they were both strong personalities. They were both, you could say, strong-willed, determined.
It seemed to be in our story today.
Mm. Committed. Yeah, there's a number of similar words that you could use to describe both men.
Now, Barnabas, this is his proper name that we have throughout the story?
It was more a nickname, wasn't it? Because when we first meet him, he's Joseph or Joseph, but the apostles, they called him Barnabas, son of encouragement.
Wow, I would like a nickname like that.
Yeah.
Daughter of encouragement. And that sticks.
Thing, when you first hear about him, they're explaining the story of how he sells his field and gives all to the church. And straight after that, it talks about Ananias and Sapphira and their different attitudes. So right from the word go, Barnabas is a very committed kind of guy, as was Paul. He changes his life around like that, and doesn't matter what he has to sacrifice or suffer, he sticks with it.
Now they had a special connection at the beginning. Wasn't Barnabas somehow involved in this dynamic preacher beginning his career?
Exactly. Barnabas was actually the one who, when no one else would accept him, he accepted him. I think it's kind of funny. The persecutor of the church walks in on Sabbath morning and everyone's kind of afraid. It's like, he's here. But Barnabas says, no, come, brother, join us, and presents them to the disciples. And so the son of encouragement really encourages him and brings him into the fold.
Mm. He seems to have this knack for bringing
advocacy.
In. There we go.
Yeah,
oh, reconciliation, mm-hmm. if we think of what Donna was talking about, this reconciliation, peacemakers kind of a thing.
They're very accepting too. He was willing to believe Paul was genuine, and he was also willing to, believe in John Mark later.
I detect a little bit, accepting almost to the point of, I don't know, being foolhardy. Mm. Accepting the persecutor of the church, just would welcome arms into, the association of the apostles.
Mm-hmm. But I wonder, because Barnabas was identified as a prophet as well as a teacher.
Ah, so you think he had the inside lane here?
Well, perhaps he was given, special insights by God.
Mm-hmm. I agree with Robert, though. It would have been scary, someone that had been persecuting you and then having him rock up and accepting him into the group.
Yes, I've changed.
Mm. Yes, but it definitely seems like a spiritual gift, someone who's friendly, welcoming. You definitely need those type of people in the church.
Yes,
he's definitely
encouraging.
An exemplary person to do that.
Someone we really need. He's absolutely essential. Okay, so what makes this team so effective? We've got two pretty strong personalities together, and yet we've got the dream team, the first mission team.
I think a story when Paul and Barnabas end up in Athens and the people confuse them for gods, and they say that Barnabas is Zeus and Paul is Hermes, the chief speaker. I think that kind of points out their personalities, that Paul is the one who's spearheading everything. He's out there. He's outspoken. But Barnabas is not small in anyone's sight. They see him, someone like a Zeus-type figure. And so whereas Paul might be more out there, Barnabas is the strong person as well, maybe the more balanced of the two. So they work well together.
Mm-hmm. So we have this balancing of personalities that works well.
I'm sure going through hard times together and traveling together would form a very close bond as well.
There's nothing like hard times to cement together.
And a shared passion and mission too.
Exactly. They really shared an eagerness for the mission that they had. They were both set apart by the Holy Spirit. Hmm. They were both called.
Talk about credentials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these men, similar, very similar, And they were really on board together.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to tackle this missionary trip, it must have been a high degree of dedication. Mm. If I think of the list of things they had to face, you know, when I have a rough ride getting somewhere, a long airplane trip, I'm not very agreeable when I get there. These guys had shipwrecks to face and imprisonment wherever they went and beatings and stonings. Yeah.
And it wasn't as though they had a manual on how to be the first Christian missionaries.
Like they had to write the book.
Yeah, they were both trailblazers working together and working this out and following the leading of God in this whole adventure.
I think that's what's so special about it, that they both had the same purpose. And so that both drove them to do their job the best that they could. Mm. And working together was just also just a great aside to that.
Mm. So this team was built around their focus on doing God's work.
I'm sure they made themselves a lot stronger by working together. Like later on, you see Paul alone a lot with his travels, especially once he's charged. You know, whereas they started out encouraging each other on their missionary journeys. I think it was a wonderful thing for both of them.
And you hear in Paul's letters, when he's alone, how much he longs for fellowship and for the support. You can hear that he really, really misses the other part of his team over there for moral support. Well, let's talk just a little bit about their disagreement. Mm. Was this a moral issue that they were disagreeing on here?
Well, not so much yes and no, in a sense.
No, you've got to take a stand, yes or no.
For Paul, he seemed to be totally focused on the mission.
Uh-huh.
Because in the past, John Mark had been with them and he'd left. And, you know, I've been in a situation where you're travelling, you're going through some challenges and somebody decides to go home, to the comforts of home, like John Mark did. It kind of puts a bit of a pin in the team balloon.
It pops.
Yeah. Yeah, and it affects morale significantly. Yeah.
Okay, so well, we can hear that. I know, you know, in a war situation, what happens to deserters?
They get shot, don't they?
There's no second chances. Well, we could feel, I guess, so Paul really feels strongly. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a deserter. The nicest thing we can do is tell him to stay home over here.
But, you know, think about from Barnabas' perspective. I think Barnabas, as the son of encouragement, is willing to give another chance. He looks and sees, hey, Paul, this is your situation too. This is where you're coming from. So just as I gave you a second chance, why don't we give this other person a second chance? Mm-hmm. But it's just funny how sometimes we forget the forgiveness that we've received. And so he just totally forgets. He's like, no, this guy's a crybaby. Leave him home. Let's continue on our journey.
It's true. It's very true. Often we kind of forget. In my case, it's different. It wasn't the same with this principle of forgiveness that was and the second chance that was extended to him. How do you feel about a young person getting a second chance here? Do you think it was crucial for Barnabas?
Oh, definitely. I definitely think that it was crucial for Barnabas, but I also think it's crucial for John Mark to get a second chance to come back because he's in the early stages of his, you know, relationship with God and just also with being here in the church. You know, you don't want to really mess with that, especially in the beginning. You want to be an encouraging person.
Yeah, but can you just be endlessly encouraging here?
Well, see, I can see Paul thinking of, say, the young people that he was trying to reach out to.
Mm-hmm.
If John Mark was going to be a liability, then we've got to care for those people as well as John Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to threaten their opportunity to receive eternal life.
Right.
Do you know, the wonderful thing about it was that they both had different approaches to it and they went off and did what they thought was right, but they still kept their main mission and purpose. They both went on to evangelize different areas with different people, and there were many blessings as a result of that because they didn't give up their purpose. They didn't get discouraged, leave the early church, drop out, get angry with each other. They supported each other's ministry. They didn't put each other down. And, you know, many blessings resulted because of it. Mm. People like Timothy got trained.
Didn't put them down, and we'll come back to looking at those results in just a moment. Well, we have to take a break, but before we do, I'm leaving you with a good question. Here's the question. the beginnings of the Christian church seem so ideal. You know the verse now, everyone had everything in common and they shared. How does it work? What are these disagreements really about? Are they good? Are they bad? We'll be back. Stay with us. In case you've just joined us, we're discussing the story of that dream team, Paul and Barnabas, and the conflict that led to the split in this wonderful work partnership. This isn't the only disagreement that we have in the book of Acts. Actually, it seems to begin quite early. We have this difference between Paul and Barnabas, but even before they come onto the scene, we have disagreements in the early Christian church. What were these disagreements about?
Well, it just surprises me after they give everything to the church, share all their commonwealth, and then suddenly you find that some widows are saying they're getting more than others. So the Greek widows felt that they were being disadvantaged compared to the Hebrew widows. And very early in the piece, there was this dispute and they felt they weren't being cared for. So almost racial conflict right from the word go.
Perhaps tying in with what Donna was saying earlier, their needs and desires were not being met adequately over here. And we have suddenly a racial issue come up.
Well, good intentions, but it didn't work.
Yes, things aren't quite working. Okay, what other issues do we have in the early church?
Well, especially as a theology major, I definitely know that there's theological conflicts all over the place. And so looking at the Jerusalem Council, there was that issue where some Jews thought that people had to be circumcised. Mm-hmm. And people were not sure in disagreements. And so they came together and had to discuss, you know, where was God leading us? Do we need to be circumcised? Don't we need to or anything like that? And that was a huge discussion for our church.
Mm-hmm. So this isn't, we're not just talking interpersonal conflict like with Paul and Barnabas or between one group and another. Now we're talking theology.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, okay, this is a big one here.
And, you know, almost every chapter of Acts seems to have some conflict, but one that particularly caught my attention was Ananias with God.
We're not talking about Ananias and Sapphira. We're talking about another Ananias.
That's right. This is Ananias that was living in Damascus. Paul went through, or Saul went through his Damascus Road experience, and God tells Ananias, go and see Paul. He's expecting you. You're talking about the same guy who I know about, and he was having this conflict with God.
And he figured he had to inform God about and just fill God in case he didn't quite get the whole picture over there.
Am I hearing you right, Lord? You know, like.
But what's interesting to me is that through all these conflicts that you all just mentioned, you know, one, you learn something about yourself, you learn something about God from this. You also have dialogue between people who would normally not be dialoguing, probably. So it's just sometimes it seems like conflict has its place.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were obviously thinking deeply in the break about my next question because you're possibly answering it over here.
Oh, am I?
But I still find it's kind of a contradiction here. I just can't imagine a very happy Christian church and conflict. Is conflict inevitable?
I think so. I think conflict is inevitable because people were different. And we don't always agree. And maybe that it's okay. You know, it's all right if we have a conflict with each other.
I'm thinking in heaven, too, there probably won't be conflict.
You think there's going to be conflict?
But there'll be differences of opinion, and maybe it's the way you deal with them that
So we're saying it's not a bad thing, conflict?
No.
You know, it's not something that I bound out of bed excitedly about. Oh, conflict today.
Yay!
But interestingly, in these accounts, some really good things did come. Mm-hmm. For instance, when the two groups of widows were, well, it wasn't the actual widows, it was people that were defending the widows.
Okay. We don't hear the widows actually talk.
That's right, that's right. Deacons came as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you think what a blessing deacons have been to the church. Mm-hmm. They were led by the Holy Spirit how to solve this conflict, and the church was stronger for it.
Mm-hmm. Stronger growth, conflict.
Yeah, conflicts don't have to be a problem necessarily. They can help us to identify particular issues and make us rethink and think, how can that be a better thing?
How can we do this better?
Exactly.
Okay.
And I also think of conflicts within churches. Often they can be very bitter. But, you know, frequently churches split off, form a new congregation, do a new church plant, and as a result, both of them end up being blessed and growing enormously. So mm-hmm. I think God can use conflict, even if it's, I'm sure he doesn't want anyone to be hurt or to suffer, especially from each other, but good things can come out of it. God can use anything.
Okay, but wait, there must be a right and a wrong. I mean, when we're talking doctrinal things, you were speaking about, that first conflict in the book of Acts. It can't just be, all right, everything's going to be fine. There must be a right and a wrong in some conflict situations.
I would say that there could be a right, there could be a wrong, or there can actually be a better.
Uh-huh.
And we need to strive to search for that better.
Now, that could be tricky. Do you have a handbook on that? How do we look for the better?
I think that in itself is a journey that we all have to take. But I think it's too much to ask for any of us to assume that we're right and we have all the right answers.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, you know, sometimes our attitude towards conflict causes the problems. You know, we need to respect other people's views, be humble, look at what the problems are in our life before we start judging other people, even if we are right. Sometimes our attitude isn't right and the way we approach the conflict.
I'm just reminded of that Bible verse that Jesus uses with taking the beam out of our own eye before we try getting the splinter out of someone else's.
Mm. Okay. And, you know, it seems as though Jesus was the center of controversy as well.
It's true. We don't think of him as being involved in conflict all the time.
But he did encounter it, and he typically found it a teaching moment where he could, you know, talk his disciples through things and use it as a teaching opportunity. Don't be like this, he said, but rather do this.
If I may, I think going along with that, Jesus wasn't afraid to rock the boat a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's like, maybe you guys are a little too comfortable. Let me stir something up here to get you to think of something in a different way.
So conflict, it can be the rocking boat situation?
It can be.
To shake us to think things through again?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be just, you know, I don't like what you did to me sort of thing. It could be, you need to think of this a different way. And so similar to how Donna was saying before, mm-hmm. Our desires, we desire something and we don't want to be rocked. We don't want our faith to be rocked. We don't want our beliefs to be rocked.
So this rocking boat experience is perhaps that moment of opportunity for the Holy Spirit. Mm. I think we're onto something here. I definitely think we're onto something here. Now we probably need some practical steps. What steps can we take from this and other New Testament stories to avoid those negative fallouts or an escalation of a disagreement? We'll be right back after the break to discuss this and more. We've been speaking about Paul and Barnabas's fallout, and we have been talking about this apparent contradiction. And I see it so often in the Bible, and I always find it a wonder how out of something negative God can bring a positive over here. And we have a lot of good things that come out of this disagreement and the breakup of the dream team. What are some of the good things that jump to mind for you?
Well, to me, it was how they had this dispute. There was no name calling. They didn't throw their toys. you know, they responded like mature Christian adults.
That's an accomplishment for any disagreement.
It is.
Definitely.
It is. And they didn't get sidetracked. Mission wasn't derailed or torpedoed. Mm-hmm. They stayed focused. And to me, that was a great thing to discover from this passage.
Okay. So the very positive thing that comes out of this is that nothing negative happens.
Yeah. And the mission is actually enhanced. Instead of one missionary team venturing out with three, now there's two.
Two.
With two.
Two.
Mm.
So we've doubled it.
Exactly.
And if you look at John Mark, he went from being a discouraged Christian. His ministry was greatly enhanced. Barnabas took him under his wing. We don't know what happened after then, but we do know he went on to write the book of Mark. He obviously had a very powerful ministry. When Paul was in prison later, he wanted him sent to him for comfort. So he obviously became a wonderful minister, apostle. His ministry was greatly enhanced because Barnabas took him under his wing and went a different direction and gave him that opportunity to go on a missionary journey, which he wanted to do.
Imagine what would have happened if he didn't do that. Mm. We wouldn't have the book of Mark, which is one of my favorites over there.
Yeah. Might have got totally discouraged if he'd been rejected.
And in a sense, Mark wasn't heavily smeared by this. You compare him to Judas Iscariot or even Peter with his denial. Like, there's quite a bit mentioned about Peter and Judas, but John Mark
seems to come out kind of positive.
Yeah, this is a kid that's growing.
So from a very negative situation when he was out there and he really got scared and ran home, it was just a moment of growth for him.
Yeah, yeah.
When he comes on. And what growth it was. I mean, you just have to read through the book of Mark to see what a fantastic concept he had of the life of Jesus, of the very essence of Christianity. It's just marvelous.
You know, what I like about this is that you can see the inner workings of how to people and, you know, work with each other. Even though they had a conflict, how do you speak to someone who you have a conflict with in the church? And how do you move on when they've said something about you, or maybe they didn't agree with something you said? You can still move on positively. So you can definitely see the inner workings of how conflict can definitely have a positive impact on people's relationships with each other.
And you know, Natalie, that's so important. So many of us get stuck at some particular point in our lives, and it's very hard to move on from a horrible, discouraging, I mean, just the embarrassment of John Mark coming home early and everyone, well, how was it? And he's, well, you know, I gave up, I came home. And yet he moves beyond this to become more than he ever dreamt of being over here.
I think it's important to remember, and I believe this lesson it teaches us that no one is a finished product. And I think Paul didn't realize that not everyone can be at your level just yet, but God knew. And so God allowed that conflict to occur. And so then that where Mark was then not finished yet, he is refashioned, refined for his later ministry.
And you know, there's the other, you spoke of the double teams, and then we have Mark, and then we also have Timothy. Timothy wouldn't have come into the picture either.
Exactly.
And Timothy seems to be a big name later on.
Huge, And as you mentioned before, he was like a son to Paul, and that, that combination that they had there.
That was something special that you wouldn't find everywhere. A very close relationship.
Had Barnabas and Paul stayed together, they wouldn't have shared their knowledge and experience with the younger ones, so it was a wonderful thing.
And it wasn't as though, I'm sensing from the New Testament as well, that it didn't sever totally and forever the relationship that Paul and Barnabas had. Paul, as you referred to earlier, he wrote other books, and he refers to Barnabas and their experiences together. He doesn't edit Barnabas out of the story.
Well, that was a good thing.
So it's not, well, I'm going to fix this guy. He's evaporated.
That's it.
It gives him credit for what he did.
Exactly.
And we do know that Paul and Mark reconciled.
Very much so.
And there was, so there's definitely, you can't leave relationships up there in the air. There has to be a moment of reconciliation, closure over here. Well, we'll have to get onto those practical steps that we can draw from this fantastic story, perhaps also from the other New Testament stories. How can we avoid the negative fallout as they did? What steps could we take?
Well, for me, I personally think the first step is humility. I think it's what Paul later writes in Philippians chapter 2, counting others more significant than yourself. You have to step down from your high horse, even if you're right.
That's not the challenging part.
Exactly. It's not about you being right. It's about what's best for the both of us. And is this friendship, is this relationship really worth throwing down because I need to be right?
Okay, so humility would be a good first step. What else could we do to stop our relationships from escalating? I mean, our conflicts from escalating and destroying our relationships.
Well, for me, in this, coming back to this conflict, they weren't arguing about their own rights. They were arguing about something bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just a selfish, personal disagreement. There was a bigger picture there.
So if we start off from selfish desires, you bet the whole thing's going to escalate and go way out of control.
Yeah.
Okay, great steps. What else can we do?
Well, when I think about things that are bigger than ourselves, I also think about love. And so I think at the core of this conflict, if you approach conflict, rather, out of love, and you can talk to anyone, and you can say, hey, you know, yes, we're having a conflict right now, but because I love, I can deal with this in a manner that will not, you know, break your heart or, you know, just damage that relationship with that person.
That's a great point. Mm.
Now abides faith, hope, and love.
And
the greatest of these. Paul wrote that. Yeah. Oh, it's a fantastic summary. But I can't let you go without asking, what was your favorite part of the story and why? Just very briefly.
I think for me it was just, no matter the struggles, the arguments, the disputes in the early church, they still had that mission and commitment, and they didn't let anything stop them from achieving amazing things.
Mission, commitment, nothing could get in the way.
Vision, yeah.
2 Timothy, Paul's in a Roman under house arrest there. He's alone, he's desperate. He wants somebody, only Luke is with him. Send John Mark. He's a comfort to me.
Wow. Yeah. After this.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Yeah. Reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And how sweet that is.
And the benefit of Barnabas's ministry. Mm-hmm. You know?
He didn't give up.
It was a win-win situation.
Right.
Yeah.
For me, I just like the dynamic of their relationship. Yes, they had a conflict, but you can definitely see so much out of how to deal with that with a friend that you're close to, that you go through so much through, but you can still deal with it in a positive way, and I like that.
Fantastic, fantastic.
For me personally, I just love how Barnabas stood up, and it's very difficult to stand up to Paul, stand up to him and say, no, let him come. I believe in him. I think he can be something great for us later in life.
Yes.
That's my favorite
part. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really enjoyed interconnecting with you over the story. Well, if you missed part of this story, all's not lost. You can go to hopetv.org/storyline and watch the rest of this episode. Now, stay with us. There's still more. I'm so glad Paul and Barnabas' story is recorded in the Bible. It tells me that as long as we're this side of heaven, we will be disagreeing. The good news is that disagreement doesn't have to pull us apart. By pushing closer to Jesus, he can turn disagreement into opportunities for growth. Life is really a journey of reconciliation in all of our relationships. While disagreement is inevitable, hate, mistrust, pain, estrangement, they're not inevitable or acceptable. Often it is when I'm clearly in the right in a conflict that I'm most in danger of behaving in a way that's bitter or deeply hostile, and I drive others away from Jesus instead of attracting others to him. Through the Holy Spirit, you and I can be knitted together in a common mission for the sake of the gospel. We can become like Christ as we join together in him. We don't have to pull apart when we have differing opinions. This can be our moment to come closer together. I would like to invite you to put all of your relationships into God's hands, even the difficult ones, and let him write the storyline of your life in his way.